So, Jay, let's hear that touchdown of the Space Shuttle Atlantis this morning one more time.
Main gear touchdown. Hurley now deploying the drag chute. Nose gear touchdown. Having fired the imagination of a generation, a ship like no other, its place in history secured, the Space Shuttle pulls into port for the last time. Its voyage at an end.
You can hear a waver in that voice from Mission Control as the last mission of Atlantis comes to an end. Pat Duggins, how many decks could you have put on your house covering the Space Shuttle program over the last 30 years, do you think?
Well, John, let's put it this way. It was 103 missions that I've covered.
Wow.
And probably close to about like 50 to 60 landings. But I've got to tell you that today's landing of Atlantis, as historic as it was a lot less panic-stricken than the first nighttime landing of the shuttle. I was there for that, and NASA actually thought the vehicle was on fire.
Really? When was that?
Well, it was 1993, and Discovery was just wrapping up a mission to carry up a couple of satellites. And when it landed in Florida, you see, when the shuttle lands at Edwards Air Force Base, you're like a half mile away. You can kind of see it. When the shuttle lands in Florida, you're a quarter of a mile away from it. You can read United States on the side as the vehicle whizzes past, but nobody had ever seen it up close at night. So there's a vent right next to the tail fin where the hydraulic units belch flame as
Wow.
the shuttle is rolling to a stop. So it's enough for the press to be going, "What in the world is that?" But for NASA to be looking at this going, "What in the world is that?" You know, everybody was kind of panicking there. And then somebody grabbed a manual and said, no, it's supposed to look like that. Everything's cool. So that's how that went.
Well, public radio listeners, no more calls. We have a winner. You know that voice. Pat Duggins, news director for Alabama Public Radio, the author of the forthcoming book, Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Giant Leap. The voice, I think it's fair to say, of public radio's coverage of the shuttle program of the last 30 years. We're going to ask you in just a moment what you think America's next leap might be, or if it's a global leap into space. But we've been asking our listeners as well, how do you remember the legacy of American space travel?
It's hopefully a deeper understanding of space-time, the continuum, and I hope that will be a long-term pursuit. What I'm not for is space tourism for the rich.
The very egalitarian Dana from South Wellfleet, Massachusetts, weighing in on the question of what's the next step in space for America. 877-8-MY-TAKE is how you can weigh in or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Pat Duggins, of course, your book is about Mars, NASA's next giant leap. It is on the drawing board. Connect the dots between the Atlantis landing today and a touchdown on Mars, do you think?
Well, the point of it is that the shuttle program, as impressive as it was, you know, 103 missions for me. Obviously, I wouldn't have done that had it been not, I mean, you know, interesting as a journalist. But the point of it is that it's been something of a technical albatross around NASA's neck since the 1970s, because the shuttle uses just about every drop of fuel it has simply to make orbit, which is kind of, you know, comparatively easy. If you want to go to Mars, you need a bigger rocket in order to do that. So to get rid of the shuttle sort of takes off NASA's hat and throws it over the wall. Okay, well, that's gone. Now what? So the point of it is, now will Washington and the White House actually follow through on all these grandiose speeches they've been making about creating a brand new large heavy lift rocket that would send human beings out of low Earth orbit and to go somewhere for the first time since 1972. It's been that long since astronauts have actually gone somewhere to do something, as opposed to these little, you know, grocer's errands flying around in orbit like the shuttle has for the past 30 years.
We're speaking with Pat Duggins, news director for Alabama Public Radio, and the new book is called Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Giant Leap. But Pat, I wanted to go back to what our listener talked about, space tourism for the rich. And we talk about private companies taking over a lot of these shuttle flights to the International Space Station. That has a lot of people wondering if people are going to be able to pay an exorbitant amount of money to hitch a ride on some of those flights. Is that possible?
Well, let's draw a few lines in the sand here on that, Celeste. There have been space tourists who have gone to the International Space Station, Dennis Tito, one, Anousheh Ansari, another, but they paid upwards of about like maybe $20 to $30 million to Russia in order to be able to go up there. And when NASA first heard about this, their response was kind of like, what? Because they didn't want civilians, you know, messing around with their space station because they could break something. That is one possibility for space tourism. Sir Richard Branson is talking about space tourism. We call that the Mick Jagger ticket, where you would pay like $200,000, go to the very rim of space. space, float around for 5 minutes, throw up, and then come back.
Right.
And then above and beyond that is the ability to go into low Earth orbit, and that's where the inventor of PayPal wants to do, and that's right. That's a whole nother smoke. So you've kind of got, like, you know, a plan A, plan B, and plan C on that.
And we should note that one is fully capable of seeing Mick Jagger throw up here on Earth. You don't have to go into orbit to actually see that. That's for sure. Pat Duggins, let me play you something that happened 42 years ago yesterday. This is the voice of Neil Armstrong.
I can see the footprints of my boots and the treads in the fine sandy particles.
It's Neil Armstrong looking at his footprint, the first human footprint on the moon, I guess, that we know about. Pat Duggins, where do you think that footprint will be next? Will it be Mars, or will it be an asteroid, or will it be the moon again?
Well, when the Obama administration came in, they created a group called the Augustine Commission to look at possible futures for NASA. And what really impressed me about their work was they actually had enough foresight to factor in public relations. It's not enough to say, let's go to Mars and isn't that a cool thing, because that'll take like 30 years. And you've got a fickle Congress and a generally disinterested public, and they're kind of like, well, so what? Let's go do something else. You can go to an asteroid in about 10 years. And if you do that, you're proving technology that you would need to go to Mars. You're actually reminding members of Congress, hey, yeah, NASA's actually doing something. We're not just kind of sitting around and drinking Tang. So that's a nice thing. But, you know, it all begins with that big heavy lift rocket. And what may actually get everybody going on this, and this kind of gets back to that tape that you just played about Neil Armstrong, is that there is more than a little bit of concern. See, the Chinese want to put a man on the moon. In fact, I just got finished writing an article for the biggest news magazine in Shanghai, and there's a definite concern that if the Chinese make it to the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, when they took off, they weren't sure that their lunar lander would lift off. So NASA said everything else but the spacesuits on your back and the moon rocks in your glove compartment gets thrown out. So the vehicle could take off. So there's a whole bunch of artifacts on the surface of the moon right now, and the concern is that if the Chinese
will get
them, that's it. They can scoop it all up, put it on eBay, put it in a museum, whatever. NASA can grouse,
well,
but we couldn't do anything.
Competition with the Chinese could be a new model for space travel, and it might encourage us to get to Mars. Pat Duggins, news director for the Alabama Public Radio, author of a forthcoming book, Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Giant Step, talking about Atlantis's last mission. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, John.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.